So we'll be listening this week to a recording of Sherry with a live audience. Please stay tuned.
Thank you. I would like us to begin with a little gift here. Shall we do that? Have a little time to focus inward and kind of check in and maybe let go of the day, if not the whole week. And so you can put aside things if you choose, whatever you would like to do to make yourself as comfortable as you can be. And then I invite you to either keep your eyes open and just let them focus at about a 45-degree angle. Actually, not focus. Just let them relax and get kind of soft. And or you can close your eyes if you would prefer that. And then if you would just turn your attention to the breath and feel the breath as it enters your body. And then feel your body and then leave your body. Just noticing how your body expands with the inhalation and contracts with the exhalation. We're not trying to accomplish anything with the breath, just noticing. Just allowing it to be what it is. And as we notice the breath being as it is, there's a little more room for us to be as we are. Just breathing and relaxing. Expand the awareness of the breath until your awareness includes your whole body. It might be helpful or interesting to turn your attention to the top of your head and then just slowly move your attention down through your body. Just checking in. Noticing your neck and your shoulders. Just allowing the body to be as it is right now. And in that allowing, in that acceptance, the body's able to let go a little more, relax a little more, enabling you to be a little more present. A little more here. And let's expand the awareness again. Let's now include the emotions. Checking in to notice how you're feeling this evening. And I always find it helpful to notice where I look to see how I'm feeling. Noticing that emotion in your body, perhaps noticing what thoughts you have that go with that emotion. Is it a good emotion? A bad emotion? A neutral emotion? And one more expansion of the awareness. Let's include the mind. Spend a moment noticing what's going on with your mind this evening. Is it a chatty mind? A peaceful mind? Is it a focused mind? Present? Now, if you take a nice, long, deep breath, let all that go. And at the bottom of the exhalation, if your eyes have been closed, would you please open them? How is that? The a good commercial for meditation? Okay. Anything about that that you noticed that you would like to say something about? And before, the static was kind of, you're in between stations on the radio. And is that kind of what the world, and now we've tuned in. Now we're, the channel is clear. Here we are, ready to go. Okay, very good. All right. Anything else? Yeah.
And my mind is like Wikipedia Britannica. It scans from volume to volume because it jumps to the next volume. Which volume do I need?
When I was a kid, I loved reading the Encyclopedia Britannica.
I love reading the Encyclopedia as a kid too.
So something happens in life and you start scanning the encyclopedia to see which piece of information is going to refer to that. Yeah. Good. These are good things to notice, right? Not particularly good things to do, but good things to notice, right? Because you probably noticed that it's not actually all that helpful in terms of getting through life.
Very not helpful.
I didn't want to phrase it quite that way. It's early in the evening, but yeah, especially not helpful. Because, of course, we miss all of life, right, while we're scanning the volumes. Yeah, so I'm over here scanning the volumes, and the conversation or life or whatever it is has just gone on, and I've missed the whole thing. Right. I'm looking at aardvark as reality unfolds. Okay. Very good. Thank you. Okay. Anything else anybody noticed? Yeah.
Well, I noticed when you were talking about the breath, as soon as I went to look inside of my breath, I felt this expansion.
Uh-huh. Just the mere act of looking at your breath, you could feel yourself expand.
Like I almost felt like my being kind of expanded. And then when you asked,
well, and those emotions, you know, those are slippery, scary devils.
And I've dealt with emotions for a long time, but right at that moment, I wasn't sure what I was going to do.
Yeah. And, yes. Now, that's really important, isn't it? Because you focus on the breath, and you're expanded. And then I say, now focus on the emotions, and the reaction is, what does that mean? What do I do? So I'm going to look at the emotions from here, from my head. Right? And now I'm caught in, oh my God, what does she want? I'm not sure I understand. Am I going to do this? You know, all this anxiety that we get going about the simple, you know, looking at my emotions. But being asked to look at things has been really traumatic for most of us, because somebody who asks you to look at something already has the answer. Right? And you're either going to have the right answer or you're not going to have the right answer, and you're going to be the right person or the wrong person based on that. And if you're the right person, then you're a good person. If you're the wrong person, then you're a bad person. And if you're a good person, you're lovable and you're going to survive. And if you're a bad person, you're not, and you're not going to survive. So the stakes are really high, right? even if it's just a simple little, how about check in with the emotions? Yeah, it's life and death. This could be dangerous. Yeah, everything is. Why wouldn't this be? Yeah, very good. Okay, so tonight we're here to look at the idea, the notion, that there's nothing wrong, right? Now, the book actually says, the title of the book is, Regardless of What You Were Taught to Believe, There's Nothing Wrong With You. But since I wrote that book, it has occurred to me that there's nothing wrong with anything. It's not just you. It's everything. Okay? And I find that comforting, relaxing, logical, reasonable, and obvious. However, when I've shared that notion with others, I get that our cultural conditioning does not draw us naturally to that conclusion. Okay? In fact, it's quite the opposite. There's something wrong with you, there's something wrong with me, there's something wrong with them, and there's something wrong with it. We call that process something wrong mind. Okay? Something wrong mind. Now, the way I break down this whole business of life into something that is understandable for me, which is the important thing, right, for each of us, right? It doesn't matter whether it's understandable or not. It's just if it's understandable to me. So the way I see it, there are two realities, at least, two realities that most of us share. One is the reality of present moment, here and now, this is it, non-separate being. Okay? Now, everybody has had an experience of that. And very often, people will have that experience and call it a peak experience. So it's a moment when every notion of separation just falls away. And there is simply being. Okay? We come out of that usually with in this kind of way. Oh my God, I'm having a peak experience. And at about that moment, it turns into, oh my God, I was having a peak experience. Okay? And the reason for that is because what we call a peak experience is a moment when I, as a separate entity, don't exist. There's nobody maintaining that I am separate from, I am other than perspective. The other reality that most of us share is what I call egocentric karmic conditioning. Okay? And the way that happens to us is that as we grow in this world. Now, I'm a Buddhist, okay? You probably noticed from the outfit that that there's something going on here other than a Judeo-Christian orientation, all right? So I make no secret of that. And one of the things that I like best about Buddhism is it's very broad. It has as its basis this notion. Each one of you, you are the sum total of everything it has taken to produce you since before the beginning of beginningless time. Now, talk about something that can back burner urgency. Okay? In the West, we have notions like grab all the gusto you can. You only go around once. From a Buddhist perspective, it's more like, why don't you just relax? Because you're going to go around several thousand more times. The Buddha actually didn't teach reincarnation. He taught a doctrine of rebirth. And that's more like everything here just changes form, changes form, changes form, changes form, changes form. So every cell in your body has participated in who knows how many lifetimes in form after form after form after form. So it's very interconnected. In fact, we go so far as to say it's one. So that's when we realize that oneness, that's the experience of non-separate reality. And in that experience of non-separate reality, there's peace, there's comfort, there's joy, there's ease, there's your home. And not only are you home, there isn't any alternative. Okay, so it's relaxing. So from that preamble, you can guess that I don't assume children come into this world as little blank slates. Anybody who has ever had children knows that children come in with a great deal of who they are. Okay? Every child, if you talk to any parent, they say, oh, yeah, Johnny, you know, he's been that way from day one. I mean, he and Susie are as different as, okay? And it's not just because Johnny's a boy and Susie's a girl. Johnny and Freddie are completely different people and have been since day one. So everything that comes at us in life gets interpreted through a set of predispositions based on our own unique makeup, okay? So that's it, right? As we grow and as life is run through who we are, we make conclusions. Now, if you've looked at the book that I was referring to, There's Nothing Wrong With You, in the beginning of it, there's about 3 pages of some of the things that people have told me, their parents, family, teachers, whomever, actually said to them. Now, I've recorded that book 2 or 3 times, and each time I do, I have the experience of needing to quit before I can get through those 3 pages, because they're so awful. You know, what is the matter with you? My God, you make me sick. Why did I ever have you? I had a good life until you came along. You have destroyed my life. You're trying to drive me crazy. Why do you do this to me? Wipe that look off your face. You think you're upset now? I'm going to give you something to be upset about. I see the nods. Okay? 3 pages of these one-liners. And these are not abusive homes. These are not bad parents and abused children. Now, it's my contention that being a child and being socialized is abusive. So, in that sense, we're all abused children. You know, you can't get from 0 to 7 without experiencing some serious trauma. With the parents who waited with bated breath for your arrival, okay, you're still going to be traumatized in that. And then, forget, you know, then you get to adolescence, right? Remember, we had the 2 realities? This is all in preparation for the 2nd reality, okay? So we're going along and we're taking in all of this conditioning designed to enable us to fit into society. That's what it's all about. It's all in aid of making us acceptable, non-dangerous, consuming, tax-paying citizens. And what we conclude through that process is that there's something wrong with us. We take all of that very personally. I just had the great privilege of being part of a team assisting a baby to arrive into the world. And in fact, the 2 ladies who were the midwives on that occasion are here tonight. And it was phenomenal. It was wonderful, marvelous, amazing experience. She was born at home in a tub of warm water. I mean, it was as good as it gets. The grandmother on the dad's side called the next day. And the baby was making sounds, baby sounds, in the background. And she said, "Is that the baby?" And the dad says, "Yes." And she said, "Don't pick her up. She's not even 24 hours old. And we're concerned that she's going to be spoiled." Amazing. But these are, you know, these are good, loving people who are trying to do the right thing, okay? When we get that information, we take it personally. We don't know that it happened to everybody else. Children don't have social networks, okay? They can't call each other up and say, "What are your parents telling you?" Right? Now, by the time they get to be teenagers, they can, all right? But that's a long dry spell before you get any kind of reality check, all right? But when you get that, you get it that, oh, my God, you know, we're all, but every generation takes it personally. Each generation thinks they're the only ones it happened to. They don't know that it happened to their parents and to their grandparents and as far back as we can remember. So that process puts us over into the reality of egocentric karmic conditioning. And I would suggest that this is where almost everybody lives almost all of their lives. And this is suffering. Okay? This is suffering. This is worry, this is anxiety, this is not good enough, this is fear of death, this is fear of disease, this is fear of old age, this is fear of failure, this is fear of success, this is fear, and this is suffering. And we make brief forays over into the present, into now, into an experience of all rightness or well-being. So with that as an introduction, I would love for us to have a discussion about your experience of any part of that this evening. Yes? It's under E in the encyclopedia, right? Egocentric. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Thank you. That's true. If I go back, something came up today, and if I can follow that back up the river to where that conditioning came from, you can start to notice the body count.
Can people hear in the back? So let me do a little recap. You notice something going on with you, and as you look at that, you can watch up the river. I like that. If you follow it back up the river, you can see where that came from if you go far enough, and you can see how it's affected you at every stage of your life.
And it turns out that it's a lie.
It is a lie, and that's one half of it, isn't it? In the first place, it was a lie in the sense that you took personally something that wasn't personal. I'm your mother, and I'm having a really bad day. And I say, you are driving me crazy. Go to your room. Go away. Am I a bad person? No. I'm having a really bad day. Okay? I didn't kill you. I get big points for that. Okay? But you don't know what it's like to be an adult. You don't know that adults just do that, that it doesn't mean I don't love you. It doesn't mean I don't want you. It doesn't mean any of those things. So you take it on as there's something really wrong with me. Because if there weren't, my mother certainly wouldn't have that response to me. So in that sense, it's a huge lie.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. As you may have guessed, Sherry's not here with us tonight. Sherry is in peace negotiations with bronchitis as we speak. They're at a very delicate stage, and we hope they resolve peacefully as peace negotiations are supposed to. If you'd like to be a caller on a future show, if you'd like to contact us, please give us a call. You can reach us at 650-723-9010. If you're better off with your fingers typing on your computer, please feel free to drop us an email. You can reach us at openair@kzsu.org. Again, you could email us a question that you'd like Sherry to address on the air, comment you have about the show. Again, Sherry is in peace negotiations with bronchitis, and we hope to have her back soon.
This is not lame, but I had this father that was this master sergeant. And
your father literally was a master sergeant?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want you to hurt yourself, Dad.
Right.
Really. Really.
So
don't hit me again. This is much too painful for you.
Some of that just seems very insane to me.
Yes, it is insane. And the point that you make is really important for all of us. It is a crazy maker. Now, my favorite crazy maker of all time. Now, I want you to look and see how many of you bought this. Okay? I tell you, you all bought it because we all did. All right? You should have known better. Come on, how many of you are still living from? You should have known better. Now, the first few hundred times we get that as a child, it is a major tilt. What does that mean? You know, you're just struggling with some kind of logic as a 6 or 7 year old. And now you're going to try to make sense out of you should have known better. How would I have done that? Eventually, what happens to us is we just give up. We just give up. I can't understand it. I don't understand it. I don't know how I would know better, but I know I should. And we just take it on. Okay? So something happens. How many? Anybody lose money in the stock market? You should have known better, shouldn't you? You really should. Should have invested in real estate. All the real estate market is crashing. Well, you should have known better, shouldn't you? If you had invested in, if you'd put it in that tin can in the backyard the way your grandmother told you, this wouldn't have happened to you. Yeah. The reason for that, of course, is that it gives us an illusion of control. If I can believe that I could have known better, then I have some kind of chance of figuring out how to get through life unscathed. So we cling to these crazy beliefs. I tell people often that we constantly choose our beliefs over our experience. Okay? Because our beliefs give us some kind of strange comfort, which I've never quite understood. Believing something that I suspect or even know is not true, I can't quite see how that's comforting, but I understand that we do it. That's a problem, isn't it? Because most of the stuff that we were told as children. And children, you know, up until the age of what, 4, kids are openly talking to people who aren't there as far as we can tell. You know? And at 4, it's still cute. You know this one? At 4, it's cute. At 5, it's lying. You know, all of a sudden, a child crosses the line, and it's not okay anymore. Here's another one. How many of you were really good eaters when you were little? Yep. Yep. And it becomes a problem, doesn't it? It's really cute right up until you're a preteen. It's adorable. Everybody loves to shove food in you and watch how much you can eat. You get all kinds of praise. And then all of a sudden somebody looks at you and says, you're chubby. Now eating is not a good thing. Now it makes you a bad person. You shouldn't do it. Now you've got to, okay? So all of this happens to us at an age when we don't know from nothing. Any of it makes as much sense as any of it. So the thing that I think we can do now is come back to the present and look to see in this moment what is your experience. I live a good deal of time at a monastery, and the monks who live there, they're the best people in the world. They really are. Now, you can imagine, they've given up their entire lives to go live full-time in a monastery, and one of the things that they do is teach this process to people. So they feed them and take care of them and teach them this stuff and devote their lives to assisting in the process of ending suffering. And they beat themselves unmercifully. Because, my favorite example, I didn't want to take out the compost. I did it, but I didn't want to. This goes back to the trauma of childhood again, where it doesn't count if you clean your room. It only counts if you clean your room and you wanted to clean your room. Because as parents, we forgot that nobody in their right mind wants to clean their room. What kind of trauma has to have happened to us that we want to clean? Pathetic. Okay? What we can do is come back now and look to see what is true. So I say to the monks, did you mean it? Did you have evil intent? Did you say right before you broke the cup, I hate this cup, I'm going to throw it on the floor and drink it? Or were you walking past and accidentally bumped it and it fell on the floor? Well, yeah, that's what happened. How then does that make you a bad person? Well, if I'd been really present, if I'd really been paying attention. So here we are with the illusion of control, right? I found out I can't control life in all of these other ways. Now, I'll be present all the time. I'll be enlightened. And then I'll be able to control life. So we come back and we watch, which is the biggest commercial of all for a meditation practice. For being present in the moment, paying attention to everything, being able to see it as it is. And what you see is what is, as compared to what you've been taught to believe. It's a very gutsy process. Because it's like, you know, the expression of having the rug pulled out from under you? Awareness practice is pulling the rug out from under you yourself. Did I see? You were supposed to.
My youngest is 20 years younger than my oldest. She doesn't get spanked. And my older kid now thinks, I can't believe you don't spank him. You spanked us, and you're not spanking him. And he's going to grow up to be, you know, so I'm trying to get that from.
Yeah. They were spanked, and they turned out all right. Right? Yeah, there's an old song, that old-time religion is good enough for me. And that's exactly what that song points at. I was spanked, and I turned out well. Spank the little monster. You can always tell what happened to people at any given stage of their development by how they are with children of that age, which is exactly what your children are telling you. They were spanked at that age. Spank him. And sometimes it's not even we actually believe that this is good for him. It happened to me. So we choose our beliefs over our experience. People punish because we've been taught to believe punishment makes us good. People are terrified of not punishing. Terrified. Somebody does something wrong, they've got to be punished. Because if not, well, thank God, we're all going to just go out there and what? What will we do? You know, I don't want to rob a bank. Do you want to rob a bank? It's not the fear of punishment that stops me. I don't want to do it. So there's an ideal of how life should be and how you should be in life. And life doesn't measure up and you don't measure up. Of course, that ideal is what I call self-hate. Okay? The thing that enables us to have this reality of egocentric karmic conditioning is that as human beings, we have the ability to remember and to discriminate. And that ability enables us to imagine that we are separate from life. And because we can remember and because we can discriminate, it seems like there's a consistent I that goes along through time. You've noticed that, huh? Yeah. This constant I that does not exist. Okay, there's no such thing. It's such a joke. This illusion of a separate self that goes along through life has the ability to imagine something other than what is. Who I really am, is tall, young, blonde, thin, incredibly attractive, very wealthy, humble, and good. That's who I really am. And then I look in the mirror, or I go to the bank. Either way, that's not what I get, right? So I have the ability to imagine something other than what is, and that ability enables me to suffer all the time. All the time. Because whatever is going on could be better and should be better. I could be better. I should be better. You could be better. You should be better. They could be better. They should be better. It could be better. It should be better. And so nothing is satisfactory. Okay? So here we are, living over here in the world of egocentric karmic conditioning. Do you know, what's her name? Anne Lamott. I hope I don't offend anyone with this. I didn't say it. Anne Lamott said it. I am the piece of shit at the center of the universe. Isn't that it? Yeah. I'm garbage, but I'm special garbage. Okay? So that's the result of living over here in egocentric karmic conditioning, where I am identified with all that is wrong, comparing myself and everything else to the way it should be, suffering as a result and feeling completely victimized by the process. So because my life stinks, I deserve everything. Can you picture it? Lisa?
I took a record.
What is that? Got to. I would have said had to. Sounds traumatic to me. Yeah, because what's a pot without a function?
Right. I mean, I had a real difficult time. You can't put food in it. You can't, cook with it. You can't access water. It's very practical.
Paper clips. Oh, bookends. That's good. And it really needed to be perfect, didn't it? It was a little tray with no purpose, but it needed to be perfect. Changing keys. Okay.
And then the edges were flowing on, and so I decided that I had to go with the flow. I had to become one with the clay and just let it be. The edges didn't want to stay on.
And haven't you felt like that in life?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, the edges just don't seem to want to stay on. Could it be the eyes of the beholder?
You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. As you may have noticed, we do not have Sherry live with us on the air tonight. Sherry is in delicate peace negotiations with bronchitis that have been ongoing for a couple of days. We hope to have Sherry back next week. If you'd like to be a caller on a future show, if you want to email us a question you have about the show or a comment or a question that you'd like Sherry to address on the air, you can reach us in a couple of different ways. You can reach us by phone at 650-723-9010, or you can drop us an email at openair@kzsu.org. Stay tuned. Next up, we have Brownie in Motion with Your Imaginary Friend, followed by Wednesday Night Live at 9 with The Letter Bomb. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. Sherry is battling bronchitis tonight. She's in delicate peace negotiations with bronchitis, and she'll be back with us next week. We're listening now to a live recording of Sherry, and we look forward to talking to you live next week.
How was that? So you gave the clutter to your friends and relatives, right? Kept the nice one for yourself because they're really not perfectionists and they're going to think it's just fine.
And they are going to see it as beautiful, whereas I am going to see it.
Yeah. Now, is there a broader application to this that you have gleaned? Like you can see your whole life in that?
Yeah.
Yeah. I talk about that as how we cause ourselves to suffer. Without these standards, without these ideas of who we should be and how life should be, without that ability to imagine another reality where my conditioned ideas of perfection rule, we'd just be left with what we are. If we didn't have any choice, we would just be as we are, and that would have to be good enough. In fact, if we were lacking enough, we wouldn't know that there was any other reality possible. Then we would be like small children and animals who we adore. Because they are so defenselessly, innocently, perfectly who they are. They don't worry about whether or not they have a pimple on their chin. They don't know what thin hair is. They don't even care if they have hair or what it looks like. Exactly. They just go about being fully plugged in and alive and adorable. Whereas we, with all our ability to judge and criticize ourselves, are often not adorable. Yeah?
I've been having similar experiences to that woman.
You've been in the bad luck club?
And yeah, exactly. When it comes to me, mine is bad karma, attracting negative energy, and I think, okay, how can I learn to stop attracting negative energy and attracting good energy?
May I? The Zen term for that kind of thinking is horse pucky. Okay? Again, if we're going for the control program, then that's a good one, right? There's something wrong with you. You're doing something wrong. It's your fault. If you would just figure out how to whip yourself into shape and become the person you should be, then you could figure out how to get what you want. May I offer you an alternative plan? Okay. Do you, now, forget that they're here, okay? This is just us talking, just us. Do you ever feel sorry for yourself? Oh, come on, admit it. Because feeling sorry for ourselves is not okay, right? You're supposed to feel sorry for other people. That makes you a good person. But if you feel sorry for yourself, it's self-pity, and that makes you a bad person. Of course you get really upset about it. Of course you get really upset about it. It's really upsetting, right? It's really upsetting. And so, can you feel sympathy for the person that this is happening to? See, they all can, but it's not happening to them. Okay? Now, is there somebody that you love? You love her unconditionally, would you say? Now, imagine that your grandmother was having a run of really bad luck. What would you say to her?
Say nice things, and it wasn't your fault, and it just happened.
You would say nice things to her, you would tell her it wasn't her fault, and these things just happened.
No, I think she tripped over the step carrying the turkey, and we were all worried that she was going to be injured. We weren't worried about the turkey.
Now, as soon as you found out that she was okay, then we worry about the... Right? Yeah. So, you know the right answer, right? You know how to treat somebody when they're having a hard time. Now, isn't it interesting in our conditioning that we know the right answer? We know how to treat everybody else, but we hold ourselves to a different standard. If we treat ourselves that way, we're going to spoil ourselves. Okay? If we're nice to ourselves, we're going to become indulgent. We're going to become selfish. And so, where does that leave us? It leaves us in a relationship with ourselves of punishment, of judgment, of harshness and cruelty. And then, living in that primary relationship, the person that we live with, most closely with, is mean to us. And then we wonder why we're not happy. Yes?
I have a
Okay, the bottom line, here's the line. The quality of your life is determined by the focus of your attention. Now that's across the board. If you consider that, can you see it? Okay, now all you have to do is go back to the last time you were in love or the last time you got something for yourself that you really wanted. Or the last time you were in a really beautiful place. The focus of your attention is on beauty, is on love, is on, and what you experience is that. And most of us spend most of our time focused on what's wrong. And the quality of our life is perfectly in keeping with that focus. Can you see that? I see that you see that. Yeah, yeah. So if we tie this in with what we were just talking about, what the Buddha taught is that everybody has one person to save, ourselves. His dying words were, you must work out your own salvation diligently. Now, what I think that means is that you are required to become the wisdom, love, and compassion that you need in order to have the joy, the peace, the love that you want to experience in your life. Does that make sense? Yeah. Now, what we're taught is you get all of that as soon as you become the person you should be. But our spiritual heroes, whether it's Jesus or the Buddha or Mother Teresa or Gandhi or Martin Luther King Jr., the thing that they taught was it's unconditional. That's the thing that made their message so compelling. It didn't matter to them who you are. You are inherently lovable. You are goodness itself. And when they see that in you, you see it in yourself. You experience that, and you know the truth of that. You know that that is what your essential nature is. Because how do you know it? Because somebody tells you? No, because you feel it for yourself. Now, if you can choose your experience over your belief, you'll stay in that place. And so then, you're not the person you should be. You don't meet your standard. You were selfish. You were indulgent. You were critical. You were judgmental. You were afraid. You were whatever. And what you do is bring that in to that unconditional love and acceptance, embrace it into that, and let it return to its authentic nature. You don't have to stand outside and play God by judging somebody for not meeting your standards. Your conditioned, learned standards. Yes?
How do you look at things can determine how you feel about it. Imagine if you went home and told her husband, guess what? I got a ticket! And I'm so looking forward to it because I know that when I...
Honey, I have a spiritual opportunity. You can't come to traffic school with me, but I'll tell you every word as soon as I get home.
Life is showing me that for some reason I need to go, and I know that there's something that's going to benefit me.
See, now, here's the deal for me. I don't think life produces lessons. It's funny. My books are always in the section under self-help and New Age. They are neither, okay? However, this is what people can relate to, so that's where they put them. My take on that is that life is just life. And if we didn't experience ourselves as separate from it, then it would just be living us. So I would suggest that what's available to us in life is to be in every moment of life the experience that we want to have. That your life is as good as your relationship with yourself. And so you get a ticket, and that ticket is received with compassion, with kindness, with understanding for the person who got the ticket. And it's not an unhappy event. As your relationship with yourself. Do people get that? I mean, what do we want in life? We want a friend. We want a partner. We want children, parents, to love us unconditionally. No, you just spilled the turkey. For God's sake, it must have been a holiday, at least in my house. You just tripped and spilled Christmas dinner on the carpet. The white carpet, thank you. Yes. And you were carrying a glass of red wine at the same time. So what we want is for someone to accept us and love us in spite of the things that we do that don't meet our standards. Isn't that what we all want? We're the only people in our lives who truly understand how much we want that. And in fact, I would go so far as to say how deserving we are. And may I say one other thing about that? And I just want to drive this point home, okay? Now, how many of you in this room think that you're good people? Now, how many of you treat yourself as if you're good people? the numbers are, yeah, now we start getting the, okay? So just a reality check, as with the monks, it's Friday night. The bad people are not at East West Books having this conversation. So if you ever wondered, and in a moment of not meeting your standards, when a voice wants to beat you up for ha-ha-ha-ha, just remind yourself that you know you're a good person. Go ahead. Making people sick, right and left. A trail of vomiting people behind you, those uncurled eyelashes. Yeah.
I know that.
Yeah. I hear you. Yeah.
You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm sorry we have to stop right in the middle of that wonderful segment there. You've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. I'm your host, Michael Gray. We're wrapping up for this evening. If you'd like to contact us, if you'd like to be a caller on a future show, if you want to email us a question you're dealing with in your life, there's a couple different ways you can reach us. You can reach us by phone here at 650-723-9010. You can reach us by email on the internet at openair@kzsu.org. Sherry has a new website as well. I'd like to mention that to you. That is www.sherryhuber.com. That's spelled CHERIHUBER.com. I'd like to thank you all for joining us tonight. Please join us again next week, 5 p.m. Pacific time, every Wednesday. Next up, we have Brownian Motion with Your Imaginary Friend, followed by Wednesday Night Live with The Letter Bomb. See you soon.